Can I read? I want to read you the flavor text of a new card that we had previewed today.
Okay.
Which is, what's it called? Admit defeat. It is not only a question of defeating one's opponents, but defeating them in such a manner that they know they have been beaten.
Hello and welcome to The Table's Yours. This is May 3rd, 2017. This is a podcast about the new FFG L5R card game and whatever else we feel like talking about. And I promise you, we've invested enough fate in this podcast to at least make it to episode 2. My name is Ben. I have been playing L5R for a few years, right before the previous TCG ended, and I've been playing card and role-playing games for the last 10, almost 15 years now.
My name is Robert Croy. I have been playing L5R since just at the start of Emperor Edition. I've been playing card games for a long time before then and after, and I've mostly just been waiting for that.
My name's Alan. I have started to play L5R right at the tail end of Emperor, start of Ivory, and I've always been interested in board games, but I've just recently had free time to play.
Hi, my name is Greg. I began playing L5R about the middle of Ivory. I've been playing role-playing games and card games for probably 5 or so years now. Yeah.
And real quickly, we're going to go through clans. I represent the Unicorn Clan because, let's face it, horses are awesome. And that we're the only one with outside perspective to know that everyone else is locked in a terrible system of struggle. And they should really just show some compassion to their neighbors instead of constantly fighting.
I have always and probably will continue to represent the Scorpion Clan, mostly because we know exactly what needs to be done, willing to do it, and we're Batman.
I represent the Dragon Clan because the wisest of us all need not to fight with only our fists.
I represent the Crab Clan because we have a big wall and we like to hit things with big spiky tetsubos. But also, recently, towards the end of Ivory, I was playing some Yusuke Dishonor, and I've been giving some forlorn looks towards Scorpion over there.
I corrupted you.
A little bit.
Always how it works. That's why Scorpion basically run the L5R Discord right now.
Yeah,
it's true. We have, let me actually check, because we had some more people come in today. Let's see
how many Scorpions are there. It's at 40. If it's at 40, I would not be surprised.
Which, by the way, my favorite card revealed of all the cards revealed as of this recording right now is I Can Swim. It's a beautiful design card that told us a lot about how Dishonor and Scorpion was going to probably work in this game. And even as somebody who's going to end up losing powerful personalities to that card, I'm excited.
Yeah, just to be clear, I am a moderator on the L5R Discord. We're affectionately known as the Emerald Magistrates. Being the Scorpion, we're in our clan chat, which we call Kyuden Bayushi. And we spent, I think, about a day and a half just like wrapping our head around the honor dial and how to draw in combination with having less honor than the other guy. It's been a lot of fun trying to figure out what exactly our game plan is from the start of the game. Well, it's hard because we also don't know how much honor we start with on our stronghold.
Oh.
Yeah.
I assume like 5 just or 6 just in case if you do like 1 and 5, you're not out of the game immediately.
Yeah, I wonder because I wonder if they'll go in order as they had in the original card game.
Oh.
And just boost everyone a bit because you don't want to give Scorpion, what does Scorpion get? 2, 3 honor?
Scorpion used to start with 1.
Yeah. 1, yeah. That would be a little hard.
All right, I've set up, and first turn, scoop. Good game.
I mean, you joke, but we both know there have been times in L5R's history where that legit has been a thing.
But that's true with almost every card game.
Not designed intentionally. Like Scorpion Dishonor. Any Dishonor versus Shadowland Horde, where their box straight up said cannot lose to Dishonor. Like I cannot conceive in any other game a more intentionally designed auto loss.
You just got to use your scorpion courtiers to break down their walls, man.
Throw the imperial seals at them.
The boxes in general are going to be interesting to see. We know Lion starts with 12 on her.
So
Queen starts with 11.
That might be a good thing to base off of.
So I'm assuming Scorpions start with 6 or 7, but who knows, and I don't want to make too many assumptions. So let's talk about something we do know. Let's talk about the rings, because I am fascinated with the fact that the rings are so dramatically different.
I have to say this, every time Edition came out or a new set, I always try Enlightenment, and I'm upset that so far we have not seen a way to win by Enlightenment. I just want to say that.
I don't think there will be. They announced that there's 3 victory conditions right now. It's Honor, Dishonor, and Military.
But at least rings will be far more relevant, it sounds like.
They will, and based on the little bit they showed us today with how your dragon cards can interact with rings, I'm very excited.
Rob, would you mind explaining how the rings work to me, like you said you would?
Yeah, sure. So when you enter into the conflict phase of this game, you make several decisions simultaneously. You have to choose your attackers, where you're attacking, and also if it's going to be a military or political battle. But you also have to give it an element. And it's really clever. FFG made actual ring tokens that are red on one side and blue on the other to signify military or political. And you place it on their province. It's just a cute little way to signify a lot of decision points have happened very quickly. But the way it works is you place it on that province and you've entered into this fight, and each ring has an effect. So if you go to a battle, the attacker, whoever wins that battle will claim the ring. But if the attacker wins, they also get that ring's effect, and each ring does a different thing. So the air ring says you take 1 honor from your opponent or you gain 2 from the token pool. So it's really just straight +2 or a swing of 1, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then there's Earth, which is you draw 1 card from your conflict deck and discard 1 random card from your opponent's hand. Fire, choose a character in play and honor or dishonor that character. Water, choose a character and ready it, or choose a character with no fate on it and bow it, which as I'm reading it makes me really think Unicorn's going to like that. And then Void, choose a character and remove 1 fate from it.
Oh, okay.
But there's more, right? Because conflicts are, they pass back and forth. We share turns, unlike the old card game. Mm-hmm. So let's say I attack you first. I get to choose any one of these rings. Let's say I choose air. Then when you attack me, you cannot choose air. It has already been claimed this turn. Someone just earned air. So that means because everybody gets 1 conflict for military and 1 conflict for politics, that means up to 4 conflicts can happen in a turn. And any unused rings for that turn get a fate point on it. And so the next turn, if you claim a ring that has fate on it because it wasn't used last turn, you can immediately use that fate.
Oh, okay.
Which blew my mind that... Like, you get to use the fate immediately.
So an honor deck might not always want air.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Well, and likewise, I might want to try to deny you a particular token. Like, if I go first in that turn, I might take air first just because, I do not want you to gain 2 honor that turn desperately.
Right.
Depending on how close you are to your victory condition.
Even a dishonored deck, because it's able to take 1 from your opponent as well, which helps you with the card betting as well.
Well, it's also interesting, right? Because I'm going to start from deck building, because this immediately made me think of deck building, because that's where my mind goes. Mm-hmm. So we have these 5 tokens, and you're probably going to build your deck thinking you want to prioritize about 2 of these. But the other thing you have to consider, though, is since fate is so powerful in this game, and I don't want to get into a full discussion on fate today, just because I don't think they've shown us everything it can do yet. Mm-hmm. Fate is so powerful in this game, and then if you can't do both type of military conflicts, you're basically limiting yourself to getting 1 ring effect a turn. If you can't do both on offense.
Yeah.
I have to think about that from a deck building perspective. Do I want to try to make a deck that does both effectively then, both to accelerate my victory and to give me more control of the rings? Or do I really just all in on 1 and try to do a more control style deck
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking about that from Phoenix because we've seen a lot of – we've seen several cards right now that say in an Earth conflict, do this. In a Fire conflict, do that. And their province, I believe. Yeah, it was their province said when you attack here, you can change the ring to another ring that's been unclaimed. So because they manipulate the rings and the elements, I was thinking about that. Do they deck build and like really double down on – one ring, because that means they're only going to be useful in 1/5 of the conflicts, and they only get to attack twice anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, with the ring adding fate every time, I wonder if sometimes the better play is not to attack, but I feel like that's only true with control decks.
I feel like you still want to always attack because some ring's going to get it.
Well, and here's the other thing, like the rings are a main contribution to you getting the Imperial Favor in this game. So your favor, you compare your glory with your opponent's glory at the end of the turn, and you get to add how many rings you won that turn to determine it.
So number of rings plus.
I had to read exactly what they wrote.
It seems like the rings aren't going to be huge then, because at most you're going to have +2, and I assume, and maybe glory's a lot harder to get, but.
Yeah, so you count the number of rings you have claimed that turn and the total amount of glory on your ready characters. So not characters you've used.
Oh, okay.
And then that's how you get the Imperial Favor. The Imperial Favor has two sides, political and one military. And the article wasn't clear. It didn't specifically say, I believe. But I think it says that you just get +1 to your army's total for that. So whatever you have standing at combat, that would be combat resolution, you just get +1 more.
So I want to talk about do you want to talk about the two dragon cards, Alan, that they show today that interact with rings?
I guess I will, since I am the dragon player. I need some time because I need to find it in this like half-page article that I keep scrolling by.
Well, if you want, I have them here and I can introduce them if you want.
You can say the names.
Sure. So they showed us two dragon personalities today, both tattooed monks. So the tattooed monk theme we know is back, and they still interact with Rings of Enlightenment, sort of. So the first one is the Togashi Initiate, who's a 1 fate, 1 military, 1 political power, 2 glory, who has action while he's attacking. You can spend a fate to spend 1 fate to an unclaimed ring and honor him, which lets you use his glory as part of his stats, correct? That's how honor works in this game?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's super good.
So you spend a fate, thus a very valuable resource, onto a ring, thus that you or somebody else can claim, and your opponent is going to get the first chance to claim it, is my understanding. Actually, it just depends how the order is working in that one. So he basically, you can spend a fate to give him a pretty substantial stat buff for the potential chance of giving your opponent a fate.
Yeah, because you're going to spend a fate from your pool onto it, right? And if you're doing it on defense, then you put it onto the ring that you want, and then on your turn, you attack.
Okay. And then the other one is a 2 fate tattooed monk with 0 glory and has 1 in each of the conflict stats. But they get +1 to each conflict stat for each fate on each unclaimed ring.
Okay, oh, wow. I have a very cool combo. Rules question about that, because it says each fate for each ring. I'm assuming that's just how much fate are on each unclaimed ring.
Yep. Yes. So okay. If there's 3 rings each with 1 fate, it gets +3. If there's 1 ring with 3 fate on it, it gets +3. That's my understanding of the reading. Which, by the way, so far, each of the cards have been super clear in their text reading. And after getting into Doomtown, I am so grateful.
I remember a time in Doomtown where a card I was playing literally changed how you played it every month.
Mm-hmm. Yes. But we can talk when the news goes dry for this game. We can talk about our problem with other games we have played in the interim between old L5R and new.
In the L5R podcast.
Because I know you and I have a lot to talk about there, Rob, and I'm sure the others do too. So I really like Fate because somebody brought up earlier in this group, it says a lot about what you are trying to do in the turn and what your deck is trying to do immediately from the first conflict. What ring you choose and where you put it, for what type of conflict you're doing, like, that is so much information. It's meaningful information. One of the problems I had in old L5R was once it got into it, it was very fun and engaging and a good mental puzzle. to work through what my opponent's deck was doing and how I could best interact with it and whatnot. But depending on matchup, you could be a few turns in before you really knew what was going on. In this game, it seems like from the first conflict, I'm going to have a very good idea of what's going on by the time that conflict's over. And from the first part of it, just declaring that it's happening, I'm already going to have a lot I'm going to have to think about.
Yeah, and first conflict happens on first turn, too. At least it could.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would hope so.
Well, Prowl's strength is really
I'm really excited for the fact that they're really keeping that feel of this back and forth in combat, mm-hmm. which I feel was one of the best defining parts of the original L5R. It seems like there's so much going on with all these characters.
I was thinking about it, and I was really surprised at just like the design idea of there needs to be randomness in the game, and trying to make a competitive game, you're trying to outplay your opponent. And the best way, just theoretically, it seems to me, to do that is to introduce so much randomness that you're good at making decisions despite everything going wrong. Or what this game seems to be doing, which is there's just so many decisions that you have to make throughout the entire game that you have a lot of opportunities to mess up. And this
game,
and
that's kind of how the original L5R was, too.
Well, and like, here's what I think of the rings. I'm going to bring up another clan. We saw a crab card earlier whose name escapes me. But the effect was when you if you win the conflict as the defender, you get the ring effect as if you were the attacker.
Oh, that's so good.
But like that's on it was like defend the wall or something like that.
Yeah, it's a crab card.
What an interesting twist, because then you have to if you think the crab clan's playing that or you've seen that earlier in the game, you just have to think, do I want like am I okay with this ring backfiring on me? Like, do I have to, like, do I think about that? Or do I just go with blind confidence forward because I'm the best clan ever and there's no way that his wall could stop horses?
I bet the crab are looking at you being like, be confident, I dare you.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Greg, you have elevators going up to the wall, right? Like, I remember in the past, stairs and horses did not mix.
We'll just like all come down from our wall so that you guys can fight us fairly
in a fair fight because it's the honorable thing.
I since this is our first episode, right? I was listening to our introductions and I realized compared to a lot of the people I've been chatting with on the Discord, we are all relatively very new to L5R.
Well, yes. If you really want to think about it, we're all technically new to this L5R.
Well, because we started in end of Emperor, beginning of Ivory. We only had like 2 years of the game. And like between us, I went to one Kotai. You guys went to two each, right?
I went to two, yes.
So we don't have a lot of the tourney experience. We both loved the game, though, and we wanted more, and then the game suddenly died.
We all were super excited. I just want to say on record.
Yeah. I had taught a guy to play the game the day the news came in.
Oh.
I literally was at the table with him, teaching him the game. When I get a text on my phone, L5R is dead.
Oh my god.
It was just horrible.
Like, pack up then. It was like, I'm sorry I wasted your time. And like,
basically, yeah.
Oh. How do you handle that situation graciously?
I was like, so some news came in. I finished the game and I was like, I don't know if we'll ever play again, but yeah, this is fun.
Thanks. Thanks for playing. Separate.
No, so about the rings, like I'm actually very excited to see how other cards react to it, just because so far we've seen, I think, like three cards, but like that don't directly affect fate on the rings, but some do. I'm just very curious to see what they're going to do with a static, but not really static, resource, like a mutual resource, I guess.
I'm interested in what you guys think about the story.
So, since I'm relatively new to L5R, I tried desperately to catch up with the story. I wanted to just read the modern stuff to see what was going on.
Right.
So I don't really know anything very much about, like, the past of L5R, so it's all kind of new to me. Like, I know they're starting at second day of Thunder?
No, even earlier.
No, they're starting earlier. They're starting before the Scorpion clan coup.
Oh, wow.
We don't even know, and we know they're going to relive some events. We don't know which. We don't know how. We don't even know, like, we can make a guess that the Scorpion clan coup is going to happen.
Mm-hmm. I'm actually really hopeful that the story is completely different and does not at all. So when the game first came out, the Scorpion Clan coup was already history. Like, it was part of the established narrative on beginning the game. So with this reboot slash reset slash reimagining, they're starting the game earlier than the game had started previously. And not only that, they've also changed a lot of things. Like, Doji Hotari is now Doji Hotaru, who's now a girl. The unicorn champ is different. So
yes.
Even though it's before the clan coup, it is also just not at all the same story.
Yeah.
That seems to imply that Mantis and Spider will not be a thing.
It may or may not be.
We'll have to see. I feel like Mantis has to come back at some point in some form.
This is dangerous territory on episode one.
I know.
Yeah, there's a lot of heated opinions about it, but
yeah.
I mean, I have a feeling like those players will still be around, and correct me if I'm wrong, but they still plan on having player participation in the story with Kotais and stuff, right?
They have to.
They said that there will be, but they don't know in what form. They said that player participation will continue to exist, not at all in the way that AEG did it, and they haven't said anything about it yet.
I think the best way we could look at it is how they're doing Game of Thrones story, albeit the very, like, two things that people were able to do, which is mostly just buy something and, like, turn a vote in. So,
see, I think they're going to do even more than that. I think that was kind of implied in how they were talking about. I think they're definitely going to base some of their stuff off that.
Did you guys see the core set contents leak?
What?
No.
Lincoln. And I didn't. And you yelled at me for dangerous territory talking about a leak.
No, it's not. It's not spoils at all. It's just contents inside of it. It was taken from, I think, a Spanish distributor. They put up the contents of the box, and someone was Spanish. Dodge Pong shoutouts took 3 semesters of Spanish, and this is what he found out: that the core set comes with 7 stronghold cards, 17 province cards, 117 dynasty cards, 98 conflict cards, 5 quote personality cards, 20 status tokens, 2 reference cards, 40 fate tokens, 50 honor tokens, 1 imperial favor card, 1 first player token, 2 honor dials, 5 ring tokens, and a rule book. Now, there's 2 things that jump out at me here. 1, they bother to include the rule book, but not necessarily another pamphlet that is strictly story. So I don't know if there's going to be story in it. I really hope there is, because it's L5R. It's probably a snippet in the rule book itself. But the other main thing is, the hell are personality cards?
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. 5 does not add up.
No, it's weird, because all the cards that I think have been released have been like generic people, but with names. Like the scorpion on the page about the rings, it's Young Rumor Monger, and the Dragon Clan cards. Yes. Like, they're all just very generic dude guys.
Well, that's because this is the core set, so this is the set they're going to be reprinting for as long as the game is a thing.
Yeah.
Like,
for sure.
And, like, also, they I think they addressed this in an earlier post. It's because they want the named characters to have a bigger impact. And also, that's a better story prize now to get a named character, because it's the base set is largely, like you said, like Matsu Berserker. Like,
yeah, that's one thing that I'm concerned about, is because if there are named characters in the core set, and the way FFG does Evergreen core set and deluxe boxes, let's say like Shouju comes out in the core set and he dies in the story, like, what happens?
Well, clearly you're supposed to honorably burn the card.
Everyone has to agree that even if the card isn't illegal, we all have to burn it.
Yeah.
I'm just going to tear apart the box on day one and see if they've hidden ninjas, like, in the liners. That would be great. just so you know.
But more baseless speculation on these personality cards. Do you guys think it'll have to do with victory conditions? Or, like, ways you play the game?
So I had 2 thoughts. One was multiplayer attempts. I don't know. So on the Discord, people were talking about maybe it's multiplayer, because a lot of people want that. And maybe it's like Game of Thrones, where you have roles that give you different effects. And the only thing I could come up with would be like left hand, right hand, underhand, voice, and emperor, I guess. I don't know. But someone else mentioned, what if they're story related somehow? And I think that'd be way more interesting.
I feel like it is, because the occult personality is not like titles or another generic term for naming.
Well, their personality. So is it like how you play the game, maybe?
Oh.
I think we can't properly speculate because of how different the game is. I could think of like 8 things it could be, and like
in Before Senseis.
Oh god, yeah. Really? Okay. There we go.
Maybe. Who knows? Like there's a lot it could be. It could be Kami for all we know. Like
that'd be cool.
But there's 5 and not 7.
Exactly. 4 clans are like not real.
Okay. My Kami's dead. I don't like
the personality cards are the 5 pieces of Fulang we have to assemble.
It could be. It could be 5 people with 5 scrolls. Like you don't know. Like, yeah, no, that's the thing. Wait. What if there's just a black scroll card like hidden in the top of the box lining?
Wait, we're forgetting the obvious thing. 5 personalities for the 5 rings, guys.
I know, it could be that too. That's the thing.
Oh, that's true.
There's a lot of possibilities what those personalities could be. My big question is, how many copies of each card are going to be in the box?
Oh, Jesus.
Because, they've done this way better since Netrunner.
Netrunner was awful.
How much is a playset? Did they tell us how much a playset is in this game yet?
They
is
said 3. Three boxes is a playset.
3 yeah. boxes is a full playset?
Yep.
No, but so they said 3 cards is a playset?
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you think
so to get all of it, you need to buy 3, presumably, right?
No. Well, that's assuming each box comes with only 1 copy of each card.
The way Game of Thrones 2.0 did it is a lot of the neutrals were 2 ofs and then maybe a couple 3 ofs. Yeah. The only things that were 3 ofs in Game of Thrones 2.0 were the neutral economy cards. Most of the neutral cards were also 2 ofs. And then all the rest of it was 1 ofs. So that's what I'm expecting here, that every single clan card is a 1 of. Because there's 17 provinces. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's 1 for each clan and then 10 neutrals.
Okay.
That's not too bad. Because we're allowed to take 5 of them to a game, correct?
Yeah, Greg, are you aware of the deck building rules on the provinces?
I'm aware of very little, so no.
You start with, you get to pick which ones are in play, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but start of the game. When you each province is a card, and they're each aligned to a ring, and you have to have 1 of each ring, you know, for your deck. So you can't like have multiples of the same province because that'd be doubling up on a ring.
Right. Okay. So you have cards that are your provinces, and then you also have cards that occupy those spots that you buy, or how does that work?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Basically, the province goes under the card to represent. Like the province itself, and the card goes on top. And when you break a province, you just remove the province card, but the card still is able to like make people.
Yes, and they also revealed another thing today, though. Broken provinces have to discard the cards on them when it comes to the phase where you discard cards from provinces.
They did this so that because they said it in the old game, and this is necessarily true. As you lost provinces, the other guy would snowball on you. Simply because you just can't produce as much as them, you know? Mm-hmm. So now when the province is destroyed, you can still produce out of it. You're just 1/4 closer to dead anyway.
Yes. Well, you only need to destroy 3 of the 4 to go to the stronghold.
Mm-hmm. I wonder why they made that distinction.
Because it's cool.
Okay. Honestly, I feel like that was just something they tested.
Yeah, the game probably just took too long.
I don't feel like there was a magical reason for 3. I think they just tested it, and 3 turned out to like feel really good and give them more design space. Like
honestly, if you're down 3, I don't know. It makes sense, because there was definitely points where L5R would drag, where it's like, you're dead, but it's going to be a lot more.
In the one Kotai I was in, I had a game where my opponent was at 1, and I was at 4 provinces, and it dragged till the last like 5 minutes, because he was Mantis and was just buying endless attachments, and I just was recruiting endless guys.
Well, and that was not very fun. Game against Unicorn went.
Well, that's also because Saikiko is awesome.
I mean, yes. I don't know. I'm excited for the game, guys. I think the new rings are really cool. I really like how it's so flavorful in being a game. I like that it's physical tokens. One, because I think the tokens they're providing are actually kind of nice looking, even if they just turn out to be cardboard. I hope it's actually kind of a little more durable than that, but we'll see.
Like poker chips would be nice.
That would be super nice. I don't think we're going to get that nice, though. Well, yeah, the Team Covenant guys are going to make a nice token set for this game, like, within a month.
Yes.
And I'm going to probably buy it because they produce amazing tokens. Anyone listening to this, go check them out if you play Call of Cthulhu or Netrunner or another living card game, because they probably have made a token set for it, and it's probably fantastic. But, oh, Arkham Horror, not Call of Cthulhu. I still mix that up whenever I think about it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so you think two box sets is going to get you a playset and with some extra cards?
I would hope so, just because, like, Netrunner, you had, like, what, three or four sometimes?
You had to get three because if you wanted three copies of everything, because some cards were one-ofs.
I mean, it sounds like there probably will be some one-ofs, right? Especially with that card count
we got. I really, really expect it is almost entirely one-ofs in a playset is three boxes.
That makes me sad. I did like Doomtown, where it was two boxes and you were done.
Yes, I completely agree. I just think the deck building, the way deck building worked in Doomtown made two boxes a little bit easier.
While we're still in speculation, how many decks do you think you can make out of a single box?
I would say two at least, just so you can like introduce someone to the game.
Two.
Didn't they say that they would have like guides for a starter deck for every single clan?
Yeah, but I don't know if there's enough cards to make a starter deck for every single clan at once.
That, yeah.
There's not, because there's 98 conflict cards, and you know, 80 mm-hmm. of 80 of that would leave 18 left over.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a feeling like two at the max.
I wonder what the because FFG has been doing a learn to play rules and also like rules reference. They've been doing that pretty recently. It's been awesome, and I really like it. It gets people playing the game immediately. I wonder
what they're also been releasing fantastic videos for how to play.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Well, I just wonder what their recommended first starting two clan versus is going to be. Probably, honestly, it's going to be Lion and Crane, because that's what they've been showing us in the previews.
I actually don't know if it's going to matter as much in this game.
I think both. I feel like they're going to go for more like either like they're going to do the extremes of like Crane and Scorpion, or like two neutral, like middle of the way clans.
Well, Lion Crane makes sense because, like you said, it's based on a lot of the promo stuff they've been showing us and the story stuff they've been showing us. But I really don't think starting decks are going to matter as much, because no matter what your victory condition is, your general action of play is going to be the same, right? You're going to be trying to win some number of conflicts in the conflict phase. You're just going to be changing what rings you're going for, and you're going to be changing... and your clan is going to determine what you benefit you really get from that, from going for breaking provinces or attacking or defending successfully.
I don't know. I feel like there'll still be a pretty big difference between a deck that's going on or a deck that's going for killing a...
I agree. Because like, the way I see it is the more honor, dishonor focused decks are going to try to do like one successful attack of their choice per turn, and then they're just going to be defending. In my head, that's how that works out, because they don't need to try to commit to break things fast, but getting that one victory and getting like the correct ring off makes a huge difference. Because like, just looking at Void is just you discard a fate off of a card. You effectively reduce the number of turns a card is going to be a threat to you by one.
Mm-hmm.
That's is a huge effect. Like, they all are huge effects. Multiple of them are huge effects for multiple win conditions. I'm thinking of an honor deck, like, even if I can't get air or whatever, Void, let me just make your best guy or attachment go away one turn sooner. And I'll do a conflict after you do a conflict when you can't defend as well. And it's fine.
The thing that I'm most worried for, and it'll probably be fine, but I think a very... dangerous thing that could happen is that honor and dishonor aren't actual viable win conditions. Because what could be really easy to do is just make the entire game province destruction with honor and dishonor as a pressure mechanic and not an actual win condition.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's totally possible that that's going to happen. But it would be kind of sad, because it would take away a lot of the specialness for things like Scorpion in particular.
Because honor versus dishonor in the old game was just stupid. And it honestly has the same possibility of being stupid here too, especially with the tug of war of honor between the honor dials for drawing cards. But what I like about this game is even though it could be stupid here too, at least we can still crack provinces with our fans.
Yeah, I think it just kind of changes the pressure mechanic, right? Like, if you had an honor versus dishonor, the pressure mechanic is the provinces breaking rather than the honor, right?
Yeah, so I think that makes every deck kind of like a military switch or an honor switch.
Yeah, exactly. And also, like, the favor is so big in this one. I could have... I like how they clarify there's going to be personalities with dashes and personalities with zeros in today's article. Because I could have a bunch of Cordios with zero military, but if I take the favor from you for a turn and they all suddenly have one military, suddenly I have to... You have to keep that in mind because you can't be as laissez-faire about your attack.
Yeah.
Did you see the lion courtier?
Yes.
It's just the person with the megaphone, Rob. It's fine.
Greg, did you see the lion courtier?
I did not.
It's amazing. It has two military and three political, and it's a lion pride, so it's a girl just like roughing up a dude.
I see it.
Yeah. Oh, it's, isn't it great?
Yeah, it's three military, two political.
Oh, yes.
Action. While this character is attacking, choose a character with equal or lower. Is that the military symbol?
Yeah.
Skill this character, bow that character.
Read the flavor text.
Let me put it another way.
politics the way the lion do.
It is military, by the way.
I do think that there's potential that every clan basically could participate in all the victory conditions as well. I don't know if that's really going to be a thing, but like I can see how Crab could play a good honor deck by just defending and never really having to attack and still getting rings and stuff like that.
Well, let's be real. Yeah. Who in the Empire has more glory than they who defend us from everything terrible in the South?
That's a wonderful sentiment, Scorpion.
God. I hate you too.
See, this is why the Scorpion Crab works so well together. They just stroke each other's egos.
Our alliance must reform.
Is that the story prize you're going to fight for at all costs?
I actually really missed the Crab Scorpion Alliance. I really liked it.
We were such good allies. You took care of the political stuff, we took care of the military stuff, and we were both pragmatists about it.
And we both knew the other was stupid, but in very specific ways that didn't relate to themselves.
Yeah.
I'm going to try to make a horse a named personality. That's an option. That's my personal goal. I want a horse to be named Emerald Magistrate.
I will fight Tetsu Bow and Nail for that Crab Scorpion Alliance.
Tetsu Bow and Nail.
I mean,
do you think there'll be clans that manipulate fate more than others?
Dragon? It seems like
Dragon might be doing that.
I feel like
it looks like
I feel like Dragon.
Mm-hmm.
Just because the two quests they reveal were like, hey, here are fate things. Yeah.
It's kind of flavorful for Dragon, right?
Well, did you read the very first article, like pageantry that the dragon just says because they're dragons, so they don't say anything meaningful?
No,
sounds not right.
Okay, you guys got to. I know you guys aren't as up on the fluff as me and some of the things. Depending on the old fluff, old dragons fucking terrifying. All right, they just literally show up out of nowhere with a much better military force than you think they have, and just do something and then leave. That something could be burn down a bunch of your clan grounds. That could be like take a single child and just leave. You don't fucking know.
Let me read for you. Let me read for you a very small snippet from the dragon story on the very first article. You ready, Greg? This is the stupidity they do.
I'm ready.
The dragon quote a common saying of their monks. What is wisdom? One asked. What is not wisdom? The other answered.
You two are having too much fun.
We are. Like, the flavor text on the Dragon Stronghold should just be, whoa, dude.
That's just, whoa, dude, ellipses, what if, like, ellipses.
Why are we a bunch of stoners in this scenario?
You guys just sit on a mountain.
They make fun of you because you're the most terrifying clan of all.
The dragon are attachment focused. That's what we've been told. And every clan gets a way of, you know, the way of the dragon is a freaking attachment.
That's interesting.
We have no idea what it does, but we know it's an attachment, which blows my mind.
Wait, how do we know if it's a attachment if we don't know what it is?
Because we looked at the card template. It's got the name on the left-hand side.
Yeah, you know we can see limited information about some of the cards.
Which, but, like, do you actually, like, see the card?
What is a card?
Oh, man. Hey, Way of the Unicorn. It had my favorite keyword so far. Do you want to know what it is?
Horses.
Philosophy.
Shut up. No, but that is really cool.
It is interesting. I wonder if things will trigger that. Like,
so
because like the unicorn deck, the two unicorn cards that have attracted me the most so far, so I can talk about my own clan for a minute, is Way the Unicorn and Breakthrough. Because Way the Unicorn is you don't get the first player token when I would pass it, and Breakthrough is. After this conflict, I get another conflict, my other conflict right now. So, like, right now the unicorn theme is, like, nah, I get to do this first. Like,
I get to do this first, and I get to do it again.
Yeah, but it's just like, I don't think you know what you're doing. Like, here, let me show you how this game works. Like, that's how, this is the vibe I'm getting.
Oh my god, of course you're a unicorn. That's a much more nice and polite way. Than what I like, it's the exact same thing. I'm just like, you don't know what you're doing. I'm gonna beat you in. It's gonna be fast. It's gonna be hard. It's gonna be now.
Well, you're just like, I'm gonna punish you because you don't know what you're doing, because that's how you'll learn. And I'm just like, I'm just gonna make this quick and painless. It's I go first again. These are the two rings I want. And no. Let me just smash down
your hands. Basically, I get knocked down. I get up again. You're never gonna keep me down.
Yeah, you're the Chumbawamba on this song.
Yep.
and that's exactly what you need to be. To be fair, you had one of my favorite holdings they've shown so far, which is just because it switches itself with another card in one of your provinces.
It's so dumb.
And it gives +2 strength. So it's just like, sorry, you're not strong enough to take this, actually. Go away.
Yep. We all may be dead, but you're still not getting through our wall.
I also liked the Plains one they showed for Unicorn, which is just... reaction, this province is broken, but something dies.
That is absolutely my favorite province right now. Because like deck building and strategy, I really want the Isua Library. Holy shit, do I want that in the Scorpion deck. But the provinces don't have influence on them, so we can't, you know, splash it into other decks.
Which actually brings up the last thing we don't know yet. We noticed the provinces have ring symbols on them, and we don't know if that's part of deck building or not yet. We're guessing it is.
No, the AMA confirmed it is.
Oh, it did? Yeah. I missed that question in the
AMA. That's what I brought up earlier. Those ring symbols on the provinces specify your deck building restrictions.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. I just want to get a hold of the card list and start practicing this game.
I really love the province system.
Oh, it sounds interesting.
Ben, sure. I wanted to say, I know the perfect way... to be a snide asshole when you play Way of the Unicorn. And when you hand the opponent the first player token, you actually give them Way of the Unicorn, and then you just start your turn.
Yeah, that is how you would do it. I totally can see you doing it. To be fair, I've always secretly wanted to make a teaching deck that's a crane deck where I'm just unbearably polite the whole time. Like, uncomfortably.
Isn't that polite. What you always do, Ben?
I mean, no, not really. I've told you before, my philosophy in card games is I want to sit down, I want to smile, shake your hand, and then I want to spend the next 30 minutes utterly tearing you apart. And then I want to stop, and I want to smile and shake your hand again, and then talk about the game we just had.
Speaking of AMA, the dueling rules have been spoiled there as well.
Oh, I thought it was just compared to numbers, you bid an amount, and whoever the difference the loser gives to the winner or something.
Yeah, it's like the honor dial thing, and you just use your stat. So you can do like a political duel or a military duel.
Oh, that means sometimes you actually just lose.
Yeah, like I think I like this change. I'm not sure. But what I realize is that to try to avoid bidding, because nobody wants to put their honor on the line, right? To avoid bidding is just, I feel like it's just going to encourage bully dueling. Mm-hmm. You know, for like, sure. I have 4 military, you have 0. Let's duel.
You bid 2, I win by 1 no matter what.
Oh, I remembered something I wanted to say. They showed us how Phoenix interacted with rings briefly. Because they showed there was a unique Shigenja called Isawa Masharu, who's a fire Shigenja. He's 3 fate, 3 fight, 2 political, and 2 glory. And his action is, during a fire conflict, bow this character, choose a participating character with printed cost 2 or lower, and discard that character. So Shigenja potentially have special effects only in conflicts where they are with rings of their elements. It's a very powerful effect too, because remember with how fate works, most cards we've seen in the game cost 2 fate or less as a base. He's one of the only cards I've seen that they've shown that costs 3 fate. So yeah. And he just gets to bow kill something in a fire conflict, basically. Regardless of attachments.
Mm-hmm. I'm really curious as to what Yogo Guitarist is about. He was in the very first fan of the very first
article. Sorry, I heard guitarist, and now I'm just imagining a Scorpion Yojimbo just fucking shredding on the guitar and just like distracting a bunch of assassins as his like courtier runs the fuck away.
Bard
confirmed.
I'm just interested in what he's doing, because his name is like Hiroe, I think, and he costs 4 and he's unique. And I would just really want to know what he does, because we haven't seen a lot of named people. We've seen a few, like that Phoenix guy.
We've seen, I think, 2. The Phoenix guy and the Crane guy. And the Crane's guy probably was flip a card over to see what it was on the province.
Man, that's good.
I have a feeling like all the clan champs will be in, at least.
See, that makes me scared for exactly what I brought up before. Like, don't get me wrong. Oh, man, do I want me some shoju. But if he is in the box, then he's evergreen legal, and he's legal forever. And then that makes me really scared about how they're going to handle advancing story in combination with legality.
Well, that's fair. They might have a personality that's just called Clan Champ.
I don't think they're going to have Clan Champs in the box. I just don't. I think for that very reason. I think they want to be able to rotate them.
I think
they'll have expansions aimed at particular clans, or just a bunch of different.
I feel like the other thing, I want to see what the rotation is going to be in this game, if anything, because that's a problem they ran into Netrunner, is that it's hard to get into, and they started a rotation to start to deal with that and to change up the meta, but it's a very slow rotation. It hasn't even started yet. There's a reason I don't play Netrunner anymore. I still love the game, but I can't in good conscience drop $300 on product and then try to get other people to get in, because most of the people I play card games with are inherently competitive people.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to want to have the most competitive advantage ever instead of playing a limited card pool.
This is what I think, because the way the art is fucking beautiful.
It is. Yes. I like the dragon.
One of the best card games I've ever seen, like art-wise.
I love how they laid out the cards. It's clean. It looks nice. It lets the art really shine through.
Oh, mm-hmm. I also like that almost every time they fan the cards, it's always 7. So the 6... Nope. Never mind. I already messed up.
Okay. Hold
on. I'm just going to finish this. The 6 major clans and then 1 like neutral card.
No, they did do that no. The 6 major clans. We're going to leave it there.
And then,
everyone's going to be like, wait, who the fuck is he insulting?
The 6 major clans and that other one we all know about.
All right, this has been The Table's Yours, and The Table's Yours. Go out and have fun, guys.